If anything has emerged in the public mind over alleged Russian meddling in American elections, it's perhaps that we're in danger of losing confidence in not just electoral results, but our voting laws and systems themselves. Do all citizens have appropriate access to voting? Can our ballot be hijacked by an outside agent? Does our vote have a meaningful role in the outcome of elections? We'll address these questions and more as we begin our discussion on making sure votes matter, just ahead on Media Meet. Hello and welcome to WNMU's Media Meet. I'm Bill Hart. Our guests are Marquette County Clerk Linda Talsma, Marquette City Clerk Chris Hazarus, and Northern Michigan University Professor Emeritus of Political Science and Public Administration, Robert Kulishek. Thank you for being here. Dr. Kulishek, you're a retired university professor, a former mayor of Marquette. You've helped spearhead campaigns for expanded housing, hospice, and climate resilience in the community. On the education side, how important are elections and voting in political science study and education?
Well, as a former government teacher, I think voting is key, not the only thing, but key to our democracy. And what I'm really finding troubling in the last year or two is more and more people seem to be becoming cynical or questioning about the legitimacy of our electoral system. And I think we really have to take a look at that. There's a number of reasons for this, and there's some ballot issues, which we'll be talking about today, right, which are also related to the issue of gerrymandering and also providing the opportunity for people to have free access to voting. Mm-hmm. So I think these are very important issues and key to our democracy.
As a society, how literate are we in these matters, do you think?
Well, I think that you can do studies and you can ask people questions and you can ask them whether they know something or not. And they may appear to be very uninformed, but over the years, people do make reasonable judgments. And when you look in the aggregate over a period of time, yes, the common person informed can make rational judgments as to who should govern. That's the basic assumption of our democracy.
Okay. We're looking forward to a big midterm election. What do you read from the public on voting right now?
Well, right now, it seems with all the turmoil that's going on in Washington that people are shifting their opinions from what it maybe was a year ago. So okay. Democrats are looking to the midterm elections with some degree of optimism. I think a number of Republicans are concerned about what's going on. The important thing that we're going to be talking about today, I think, is to make sure whatever people vote, that that vote is accurately reflected in the outcome of the election. And that is so crucial, because if people start thinking, well, you can vote, but my vote doesn't mean anything, well, we've lost something.
Sure. Lost a voter, probably.
Yes.
A clerk's job is one of the most demanding in public service. Linda, you're the clerk of Marquette County. You have the circuit court. You have clerk vital records, jury, plat, and concealed weapons licensing boards, and you run elections. Can you give us a brief description of your duties and responsibilities as they relate to elections?
Yeah, we'll focus on with the elections. I put together a few little items that may some people may not even realize that we do behind the scenes. So to make it run smoothly, it starts with the training of the precinct inspectors. The task is very important, as they're the individuals that work on election day in the voting areas. The voters rely on the precinct inspectors to guide them through the process. After that, after they're all trained, then what we do next is I would prepare the ballots. After receiving information from all the jurisdictions throughout Marquette County, I work with my staff and then the County Election Commission, making sure that all the candidates and proposals are correct. I then update the information with the state of Michigan so their staff can put it on the website, through which we refer to as the voter information area.
Okay.
Through the area, that is where the voter can actually see where they're supposed to vote, if they're registered to vote, and they actually can see a sample of the ballot.
I see.
Which is very nice. That's somewhat new within the last 5 years, so we like that. A lot of people like that the phone savvy, and they like to look at it right now.
Okay.
Then we advertise the upcoming election so that the voters can come to the polls feeling confident about their selections on the ballot that day. After that, then we wait for the polls to close, because now we're on election day.
All right.
The precincts will upload their results through an encrypted process to my office, where at that point we decrypt it. And then we go ahead and the clerks at the end of the night will bring in their envelopes. So the next day when I meet with my board of canvassers, the county board of canvassers, we can look at the clerk envelope, the county board of canvassers looks at their envelope, we compare then what was uploaded to us. So it's a checks and balance, which is very important in the voting process. And that's about it. After that, then we just post it on the website. So that's a quick synopsis of the election process.
What actually happens, okay. Chris, I believe you were deputy Marquette city clerk for a couple of decades before you took the helm in 2015, is that right?
Close.
Close?
This year is 25 years for me at the city, so
wow.
I started in treasury for 5 years, water billing for 5 years, and then these last 15, with the last three being as clerk.
Okay. Okay. Could you tell us something about your department and your role in elections?
My department went from a two-person office, which was the clerk and the deputy, to a three-person office now.
Okay.
Which was absolutely necessary with all the goings-on and the changes in elections, from the electronic poll book that mm-hmm. we took on, new equipment, new tabulators that we now have. And it's just all that up and coming equipment that you're not doing everything by hand anymore. So you mm-hmm. really need everybody with hands-on experience that knows the technology. So in moving forward, I feel it's a much safer atmosphere, because when we're involved with loading our voter information into the electronic poll book, which when you go in, they ask you for your ID,
all right.
and they scan it, and that's less chance of error that you're actually you. They look at your voter ID,
mm-hmm.
But it's also a standalone unit. It's not connected to the internet.
Right.
It is totally, and that's what a lot of people
so
don't.
So it's unhackable in that sense.
Yes.
I mean, from outside.
It's a total standalone unit. There mm-hmm. is no connection. There's no way to hack something that's just a database. That's,
standalone database. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think what we've just heard is something that's important for people to realize, is the quality of the staff and the expertise that we have in dealing with the election process, and that the election process in this county, and I think in most counties throughout the nation and cities, is really tight. And the concern about the term hacking into elections.
Right.
Last time it's alleged that the Russians made a few attempts, but basically they didn't get through.
That's right.
We have to continue to have cybersecurity to make sure that doesn't happen. But the concern about Russian involvement in the election was not with reference to stuffing ballot boxes or altering the tabulation of votes, to the extent that the Russians could have had any influence if they did. It was more manipulation of the communication process, the media, mm-hmm. hacking in to the information that people get, which prompts them to vote one way or another. But I think right now, it isn't reason for complacency, but right now our system is pretty solid.
Seems to be.
And
very
I think
solid.
We can work on it between now and the next by-election and the next presidential election.
It's okay. The same. We have new tabulators now, and it's another checks and balance. These new tabulators scan both sides of the ballot as you go in and vote. It goes into a box, it's totally anonymous, and you're done. If there should be a question, you have the physical ballot that you can recheck, and the scan. So there are several ways that you can fall back on not having any interruptions in your ballot.
With regard to the technical part of this, I think Chris has touched on an important point, which I think we're covering in Marquette, mm-hmm. in Marquette County. But I think there are some places in the nation where they don't have the ability to go back and see paper ballots.
Right. Right.
That's something that I think really needs to change. Whether, you know, there just could be a breakdown in the system, whether it's hacking or not, that you should be able to go back
That's
and
right.
find a paper record or some record that just doesn't disappear because of a glitch in the computer.
Sure. And our Secretary of State has always withheld that Michigan will always have a paper ballot because there's never that question. If you have touchscreen in some of the other states, that's it. It's touchscreen, it's in the machine, but there's no physical backup. And it's just like anybody else. You want that piece of paper in your hand to make mm-hmm. sure that you're being counted.
Yeah.
Okay. And one other point can
sure.
I make? Every election cycle, what we do before every election is we do what's called a public accuracy test, which is open to the public to view the mm-hmm. machines.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get a lot of attendance, but know that it's out there. We do publish this. If you're ever in concern of where it is and when it's going to happen, please let your precinct know or myself.
Mm-hmm.
We'd be happy to direct you there. What you then get to do is we put in every scenario that could go wrong, and it shows that the machine will pick that up. So you're trying to see that the machines are error-free. But that way you can actually look at them, watch the test. If you have any questions, that's the time to ask. It's a very nice thing that we do.
That's great. The U.S. Constitution, Article 1, Section 4, gives state legislatures the power to regulate elections. Yet according to the National Conference of State Legislatures, no one really knows how much it costs overall to run elections, partly due to their variety, complexity, participation by several levels of government, those sorts of things. But a clerk could probably come pretty close.
I can come pretty close.
So what are the associated costs by category, and are there ballpark figures, county and city, for, say, the election of 2016, the
well,
last big
I
one
did
we had?
Well, what I did was I grouped together. I took each one from 2016, because that's what was asked.
Mm-hmm.
So the presidential primary election was covered by the state of Michigan.
Okay.
We didn't have any county, city, township fees.
All right.
In May, we had a school election. The schools then pay that cost. That was roughly $5,000. That's about what a school election will cost.
I see.
Then we get into the August primary. And I grouped them all together. It was approximately $25,000 to run that election. November general cost for 16 was approximately $32,000. So they're not small fees. There's a lot to be said for the money is being spent well. We do watch and make sure that we're not overspending. I think that's a fact there.
Mm-hmm.
And we've done quite well with the cost. I think
good.
We've kept them good.
What do you say?
So in the city,
mm-hmm.
About $22,000.
You guys have to coordinate your
we
elections
do,
just part to save money and time, right?
We do share
mm-hmm.
costs
okay.
to save the taxpayer money. We share costs wherever possible. That's something that Linda and I are totally mm-hmm. Geared to. And we like to see the open communication between all the municipalities. So we
That's
just
good.
Work together.
The states have a stake in seeing that elections are well run, of course. What's the state's contribution to local election operations?
They're
you
more involved
mentioned they paid
what,
for primaries. And,
oh, how much
yeah.
they pay? You want me to
or
focus
it could be
more
just
the
what
pay?
Their other contributions too. It might be expertise. It might be, you
well,
know.
I want to focus on what they're there for us.
Okay.
Administering the state's election and campaign finance law. Campaign finance is a big issue, as you know. So that is its own area of expertise. They provide information about registering to vote and voting. They provide an oversight and training to local election officials. There's certain things that they train us to do, and then we go forward with that training.
Mm-hmm.
So they will train me before I train the precinct inspectors. So it's kind of like a little bit of a downcast. You know, it just goes down the road. They assist candidates for running for statewide offices. So if it's a statewide office, of course, they're going to the state to actually do their candidacy. That doesn't come to the county level or the township or city level. They also do what's called our qualified voter file. That is something that they're revamping again and making better. So they're making sure that that who's in the roles should be in the roles. They give everybody an opportunity to make sure if they want to be a registered voter, they are. That they, if they have actually went through the steps, that they're still there and they want to be still there. We have the interstate crossover that we do to make sure that they're not voting in other states and in Michigan. So there's a lot involved in that. Excuse me. And they also have this state of board canvassers. So when we go ahead and at the county level submit all of our information, they also go on to the state board of canvassers to certify the full election overall in the state of Michigan. So,
okay. A proposed ballot measure would liberalize voting in Michigan. The campaign is called Promote the Vote. What flexibility do Michigan voters currently have in terms of ways of voting?
Actually, with what we call the QVF system, our qualified voter system, it's a mechanism where you can register at the Secretary of State, you can register by mail. There's several ways you can register to vote. Right now, the only concern is if you register by mail, then the first time you have to appear in person to vote, and that's basically a security issue, and so that we know if you're registering to vote, this is actually you.
Okay.
There are proposals out there to have registration online. The Secretary of State is moving towards that. I was just looking at some legislation that's out there.
Okay.
Because we have this state system already that you can go and register to vote, and it's been used for years and constantly tweaked for the betterment of all the voters, they are looking at implementing that to register directly online.
All right. No early voting?
No early voting. Everyone tends to refer to absentee voting as early voting,
mm-hmm.
and that's really not the case because there are stipulations for absentee voting that are still out there.
Okay. Topping the list of, let's go over some of the key proposals here. That proposed constitutional amendment, by the way, Promote the Vote, still needs 315,654 valid signatures, or 315,654 valid signatures to make the ballot. But here are the three key parts of the proposal. Topping the list for many observers is no excuse absentee voting for any qualified state resident. Currently, voting absentee requires that you be 60 years old and have some sort of reason, an excuse, they call it, sort of officially called an excuse. 27 states, including Wisconsin, allow this. If it's such a good idea, why haven't we adopted it?
I think it's more of a voter responsibility issue,
mm-hmm.
that if you're 60 years old, you qualify. And there are several other issues. It's not 60 and other issues. You're out of town. You can't get to the polls due to some sort of handicap issue, or your religious tenets
forbid you
to go to the polls. There are several things out there that just have, along the way, made the voter responsible for if you want to come in and get a ballot. It's the same thing we'd be doing in the precinct, but you're getting that ballot earlier.
I see. Go ahead.
There are a number of issues on this Promote the Vote ballot, but it's basically making access to the vote less troublesome and more accessible to people. I think we have to put this into some kind of context, because if you compare the United States with many Western European countries, our voter turnout is like sometimes 30% lower on average. Well, voting requirements in the United States are much more stringent than in these countries. And if we want democracy to work, We want to encourage people to vote. Certainly legitimate voters should be encouraged to vote and make sure that others aren't. But there are a number of things that make it difficult for people to vote. You know, timing of elections. When people are working and they have kids, you know, maybe you have to extend the time of the vote. The place where the voting is taking place is an important part of it. This absentee voting. Sometimes that's an opportunity for people who are very busy and unable to do it to vote, and they don't have to go in and plead their special case in order to do it. Mm-hmm. So my feeling on this particular issue is to the extent that we can extend access to the vote to a greater number of people, making sure that those people are eligible voters, that should probably be encouraged.
I totally agree with that frame of thought, because if you're a registered voter, it's maybe you are working, or maybe you just don't want to go and stand in line, which could be a while in a presidential election, but you want to vote. I want to be able to offer you that opportunity. So I don't have any issues with that at all.
The military personnel stationed overseas can vote absentee, right? But the state wants a month lead time. I don't know if that's a strict requirement, or they usually want a month lead time, I know.
So the requirements right now for federal voting is actually generally at the beginning of the year in January, you send in to your local clerk an application to vote. So we know that you want that ballot sent to you overseas or wherever you are. And then we hold that application for the entire year. Mm-hmm. You can actually, under military information, you can actually send in what's called a FVAP. And it's actually a postcard that you can register to vote and ask for your absentee ballot on the same document.
I see.
So military, they do have a bit more benefits.
A little bit more flexibility, understandable.
So
we're not looking at any changes in that particular area of absentee voting.
I think somehow, and I don't have the details on this, but they're making it a little easier in terms of the time span, because apparently there have been some studies done that some military people have found that their ballots are getting in too late, or that they're getting the information too late for them to actually vote. And by extending the time, this apparently would become less of a problem.
Well, it wasn't only extending the time by the MOVE Act. Mm-hmm. We actually, when we have their application on file, as soon as those ballots are available, those are the first ballots to come out, and we have a deadline to do that. We actually electronically send the ballot to the requester. Mm-hmm. So that cuts down on them sending us the application. We then mail them, you know, back the material. So the only requirement on their end is they have to print it out to vote the ballot and then physically mail it back.
I see.
So the time frame is now only on mailing it back.
Now, is this consistent in all cities throughout the state?
Yes.
Okay, so it's not just by the local.
That's one of the things that changed that we really noticed a difference in, because the time frame with the mail and people ballots getting lost in the mail, sometimes it was an issue. We didn't get ballots until after the election was done.
Okay.
So this really helped.
We've improved that drastically. That has been, and I have not heard negative responses since that.
That's good.
I mean, I haven't heard any military, because they'll come to me usually and they'll give me a call or they'll email me and say, hey, I haven't gotten it yet. I don't have that.
There's another provision in there that ensuring the accuracy and integrity of elections by auditing election results. And I think that's not consistent across the state. As we were talking about before, in Marquette County, we have a paper trail. But apparently not all units of government in Michigan do, and this would ensure that they did have some way to check if they were hacked into.
Okay.
Is that true? Or?
No, I don't know where that's going with that. We all have paper trails. That's a state of the Michigan requirement.
State of Michigan.
So there is a paper trail.
Every district.
In every county.
Is a poll audit required?
A poll audit. Explain what you're.
That may be the question.
Exactly. Exactly.
That
what
may
Bob
be the question.
I would prefer the. Yeah.
Okay. I would. Okay. The key question there is, what do they mean by a poll audit? I interpreted that to mean that, you know, there had to be the capability of doing that because they're a paper ballot. But from what you've just told me, it appears that there are paper ballots throughout the state.
Including the military. So that's the requirement of sending back that paper ballot.
That is one of the things for voters to follow and look up before they vote on this one.
And actually, one other, we went a step further. The state of Michigan is now required. They'll randomly give me 2 to 3 areas, precincts, to actually go to and audit and make sure that everything on their end is correct. So that's kind of a nice thing, too. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Another measure is in this promote the vote is to allow same-day registration. Currently, Michigan voters have to register 30 days before an election. Does this present any special problems for election and state officials? Only 15 states allow this.
I think there's the reason why there's only 15 states probably
You've got about
allowing
a minute.
It.
Go ahead.
And we're looking more at the state of Michigan right now, and we don't allow that. I agree with a 30-day mm-hmm. registration. I think there's enough information out there for the voter to know to come and check and make sure that you're a registered voter. The nice part of it is we've made it very accessible now where they can actually go to the state of Michigan website, see if they're a registered voter. If they're not, they can go ahead and just download that form and get that processed.
Okay. I'm afraid we have to call that for time. Here in our first installment of Making Votes Matter, we've been talking about access to voting and other voting issues with Marquette County Clerk Linda Talsma, Marquette City Clerk Chris Hazaris, and NMU Professor Emeritus of Political Science and Public Administration, Bob Kulishek. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us.
I'm Bill Hart. Thanks for joining us on MediaMeet.
The preceding program was produced in studios located in the Edgar L. Hardin Learning Resources Center by WNMU-TV, Northern Michigan University Public Television.